Okay, hey, I want to talk a little bit about the transition process from wherever you are in the game of leadership to where we all want to become. And ultimately, the goal of all of us should be to become a great leader. Now, some of us, I'm kind of adapting some material that I read from a book called Good to Great. So it's kind of an adaptation of some of those materials. And they're again, last time I talked about organizational principles, but how if you back up a little bit away from that, organizations are made up of individuals. So it applies to you. So it's an adaptation on some of that material, and it's talking about the transition process that I believe each one of you are in the process of making, and what's fun about it is it applies no matter where you are in the game. So if you're a first semester leader in the furnace, maybe you've never led one single person in your life at any capacity whatsoever. Maybe you are more seasoned and you've led groups, you've led people, you've understood that you have some measure of influence. And I think that's ultimately point number one, is each one of you need to recognize that you are a leader. A good working definition that I've always used, it's not original, it's a John Maxwell kind of thing, that leadership is influence. Nothing more and nothing less. There's lots of discussion we could have about what leadership is, what leadership is not, but for the sake of time, that's a good working definition. There's lots we could add to that, lots we could take away from that, but that's a good definition. So you first need to recognize, A, I am a leader. You gotta like get that in your brain. It's not cute. It comes with high responsibility. It comes with a high level of accountability. And you are responsible for these individuals this semester that you've been given. Scriptures tell us that to whom much is given, much is required. So I guess just to be a little bit somber and a little sober, don't take this lightly. Have a ton of fun with it, but understand the magnitude of it. That you have the potential to impact this handful of people that you've been given for eternity. It's a big deal. Now that everybody's depressed, hopefully, hopefully you're challenged by that and not depressed by it. But Jim Collins talks about, in Good to Great, he talks about that we have the opportunity to, and David hit on some of these same ideas, to alter the trajectory of the people that we come into contact with. And it's kind of a for better or worse idea. You have the opportunity to send these guys higher and change their trajectory. Say they're operating at this kind of trajectory here. You have the opportunity to come into their life, encourage them, love them, empower them, call them to righteousness, model the way, be a great example, and you can change their trajectory like this. So 3, 4, 5 years down the road, if they were here, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, they'd still be operating in that trajectory. But if you'll alter it just ever so slightly, by the time that you've been given to be with them, when they get 3, 4, 5 years out, it's wider and it's wider and it's wider. Yeah. So that's kind of how we need to think about our leadership role with these young men and these young women. You don't have to perform a miracle in their life. Nobody's asking you to do that. Nobody's asking you to come in and be their savior. Nobody's asking you to come in and rewire them. You know, all we're asking is that you come in and you just alter their trajectory ever so slightly. Cool? So we want to talk about the transition from wherever you are to great. Some of you may be kind of at good, and we want you to get to great. Some of you may be at subpar or mediocre as leaders, and we want to get you to great. Some of you may be terrible, horrific, pitiful, lame, and depressing. That's supposed to be funny. Supposed to be funny, not insulting. We want you to get to great. The importance, I think, is we kind of have this notion of leadership, and for most cases. We can't even really define it. We don't really know what it looks like. It's hard to like put a pinpoint and say that is leadership or that is not leadership, or I'm this kind of leader or I'm not that kind of a leader, or I'm a better leader than that person is a leader, or they're a better leader than I am. It's kind of this hard, intangible thing that's hard to wrap your arms around. It's kind of like, you know, you've heard the little parable of the blindfolded men that get led up to an elephant. You guys heard this? And they're asked, it's pretty fascinating. So you can imagine you have like an elephant in the room, and you like bring in a group of people and they're blindfolded, and you kind of lead them up to the elephant, but they don't know it's an elephant, and they start like touching it and feeling it and smelling it, and I'm just kidding. And then they're asked to tell, what is this? And one guy, you know, you can imagine he's got the trunk or something like that, and you have to pretend they're probably a little bit mentally handicapped and can't quite figure it out for the parable to quite work. But so, you know, he's got the trunk, you know, and he's feeling it, he's blindfolded, he has no idea it's an elephant, anything like that. You know, he might think, oh man, this thing is a, you know, it's a fire hose or something like that, you know. You know, or you may get somebody that gets the tail and they're feeling the tail and they're like, man, it's like a rope or something. It's like they describe everything it is that they know to describe, and they're kind of intaking this experience to the best of their ability, but they're never going to probably be able to figure out that it's an elephant, because all they have to work with is their little section of it. Does that make sense? And leadership is kind of like that. It's like we've all had different experiences of what leadership is. What leadership is. We've all been under the authority or the ministry or the influence of different kinds of leaders with their different styles and their different giftings. And we all come from different experiences. All those kinds of things. And I think that some of the frustration with leadership is that we've kind of have leadership out here as kind of the end all. Like that's the conclusion. Like that's the goal, that's the sum. And we've done a pretty poor job of helping people with the process. We say, oh, you need to be a leader. Or, oh, you need to be a great leader. Or, oh, you need to be a person of influence. You need to be a person that can empower people. And it's kind of like this thing, it's like, how in the crap do I get there? You know what I mean? It's like, what first, and then what next? So today I want to talk just a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about the process and kind of some of the things that I think are involved in becoming a great leader. And I think that the best way to describe what I'm talking about is what I think we have that's in our power to control as present leaders, as emergent leaders, as future leaders, as developing leaders, whatever you want to category you want to put yourself in, we have the power to control the build-up. And we don't so much have the power to control the breakthrough. Does that make sense? So we have this like we have this build-up, 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 build-up. And those are all the things that we can control. Those are the ways that we develop ourselves. Those are the information that we take in. Those are the people that we surround ourselves with. We go on and on and on describing the build-up. And there's this breakthrough that you could never plan, that you can never calculate, that you can never manufacture, that can never be granted to you, that happens at this undisclosed time, and then all of a sudden you truly are a great leader. But if you just walk around going, I'm going to be a great leader, or I am a great leader, you'll never get there. It's kind of my conclusion. Because you'll forsake all of the things necessary to one day be that. So there's three things that I think kind of encapsulate what it is, kind of this build-up and then breakthrough process. And the build-up process, I think, is contained in these three things. And the first thing, these are the things, three things we're going to talk about, is these three stages. Discipline people. And then more specifically, what we're going to talk about in the discipline people category is what Jim Collins would refer to as the level 5 leader. So if you want to take mention of that, we're going to talk specifically about what it means to be a level 5 leader, and I'll describe that more in detail, but we'll hit the three stages first. The second stage is disciplined thought. David talked a lot about discipline and It's really, 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 really important. And specifically there, we're going to talk about the hedgehog concept. Hedgehog concept, not Sonic the Hedgehog for you Sega lovers. And then the third stage is disciplined action. And that is a culture of discipline. Ready to get those? Okay, first thing, discipline people, and more specifically the level 5 leader. Harry Truman said, "You can accomplish anything provided you do not mind who gets the credit." Say it again. You can accomplish anything provided you do not mind who gets the credit. And we could stop right there and talk about that for a long time. But I just would hope that that message would sink in just a little bit, that we would seek to be humble and modest people. And that through our leadership endeavors, we wouldn't seek to become a larger-than-life hero, but that we'd be humble and modest first, especially in the way that we lead people. I think that's really important. So I'm going to describe for you first kind of the first 4 levels, and then we'll talk a little bit about what a level 5 leader. Level 1, and you can jot these down if you want. I'll hit kind of some big words that are noteworthy and then maybe a few descriptive words. But level 1 is a highly capable individual. So each one of you are, you're at least capable individuals at this point, and I think you're highly capable. You may not be convinced that you're highly capable just yet, but hope that you come to terms with that. So the level 1 is a highly capable individual, and that individual makes productive contributions through talent, knowledge, skills, and good work habits. And here's the importance of hearing all 5 of these levels, is because you have to recognize, where am I? So you have to ask the question, where am I? Because some of us are going to be level 1 right now, and that's okay, and we need to be cool with that. And scriptures even talk about that we need to recognize what's been given us and do accordingly with it, and that we can't really control what we've been given, but we can do our best to honor what we've been given. So that's level 1. Level 2 is a contributing individual. So you're now no longer just a capable individual, but you're contributing. So you've progressed beyond, I'm talented, I'm gifted, I have such and such skills, I have such and such knowledge base, and you recognize I have those things, now I'm going to do something with them. So we're moving forward from capable to contributing. So a contributing individual, and you contribute individual capabilities. So again, you have to understand what your capabilities are. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. Level 3 is a competent individual. So now you're not capable and you're not just contributing something, but you're a competent individual and you're contributing something of worth. There's a greater degree of merit in the thing that you're offering, in the way that you're leading. Now you're kind of in that stage that the organization or the group that I'm a part of or leading, it's more valuable with me in the equation than it would be if I were outside of it. So we've kind of hit that level where we're a person of greater worth in the overall success of the group. So that's a competent individual. Level 4, which is a really high caliber leader. So level 5s are like really unique and really special. So don't think like level 1, 2, 3, 4 are just like elephant manure that we were talking about earlier. Like these are all like high levels of leadership, and they're all things that are good, but the idea is that we would be progressing, right? So level 4 is what I guess we'd call an effective leader. And they catalyze commitment to and vigorous pursuit of a clear and compelling vision, stimulating higher performance standards. So these people are great leaders. I mean, they're casting vision. People are following them. They have high standards of excellence for what they're doing, for the people that they're leading, for the product that they're producing, on and on and on and on. But here we go, level 5. And then we're going to talk just a little bit about what a level 5 looks like And then the other two points, the other two stages, the discipline thought and discipline action, those are the things that a level 5 leader actually does. So we're going to describe for you a level 5 leader, and then through discipline thought and discipline action, maybe you'll kind of understand what it is that I can do to become that or to move at least one step closer. But a level 5 builds enduring greatness through a paradoxical blend of personal humility and great will. There's a story of a general who landed his ships on the shore, and he said, "Burn the ships." And when they landed and they burned the ships, that was just a sign that they had one option. It was succeed or die. Right? They didn't have a way to retreat. And I think we have to kind of get that mode and kind of that mentality that in your own life and in the lives of those you're leading, failure isn't an option. You have to move forward with that. And I know that's one extreme. But you have to move forward with failure's not an option. Because if you leave room for failure to exist, what's going to happen? You're going to fail. And then you're going to fail, and you're going to make excuses for it, and you're going to rationalize it away. I even was watching a little NFL football yesterday, and they were talking about the Cincinnati Bengals, and they were talking about how they lost the game earlier in the season, and I don't even remember who it was, but they haven't been to a playoff game, or they haven't hosted a playoff game in like over a decade. So they've had like a decade where they've been like a subpar, pretty poor team. And they've had an amazing year, and they lost the game middle of the season, I think, is what it was. And the next weekend, some sports reporters were there preparing to cover the next weekend's game. And he said that the whole team was absolutely devastated that they had lost the week before. That they were just emotionally wounded and beat up and just hanging their heads. And the sports reporter was asking the coach, like, what are you going to do about this? These guys are down in the dumps. And he was coming from the angle like, it's not healthy that they're so emotionally beat up about this loss. But the coach said, 10 years ago, or 2 years ago, a loss like that wouldn't have even fazed these guys. Because they expected it, and they were fine with it. So it was an issue of standard. So if we set the standard that failure isn't an option, then we've set the standard as high as we can set it. And that's ultimately, you know, what we need to do as leaders, especially in the context of the furnace here, is set the standards as high as you know to set them. And that is, a failure isn't an option. Spiritual failure isn't an option. Physical failure isn't an option. Social failure is not an option. We're not going to leave people emotionally failing. We're not going to do any of that stuff. Failure is not an option. Second thing a level 5 leader does is they understand that they always have to work harder to become qualified for the job. So you need to walk out of this meeting, the beginning of this semester, kind of with a little bit of, I'm underqualified. Not, man, I got this, you know, right here in my hip pocket. This is cake. If you're sitting here right now thinking, oh, this is cake, I got this, you're wrong. All right? Because if it's cake, then the standard isn't high enough, right? You haven't set a standard high enough for yourself, and if you haven't set a standard high enough for yourself, you're certainly not going to set them high enough for the ones you lead. So set the standards high, and you have to walk around always working to become more qualified. What does becoming more qualified as a leader mean? It means reading more than the next guy. It means praying more than the next guy. It means being more intimate with God than you are than the next guy. Not intimate with one another. Unless, yeah, no. Or the next guy. Or the next girl, for that matter. So some of those ideas. Never stop trying to become qualified for the job. Here's an important one. All of us have an ego. Say, I have an ego.
I have an ego.
And we have to recognize that we have an ego. Otherwise, it's going to be our worst enemy, right? Because if you walk around pretending like you don't have an ego, man, you're in a world of hurt. Because then you're going to operate and function out of kind of this like sick, unhealthy place. And that's not good for anybody. So all of us have an ego. The question is, what are we going to do with our ego? What are we going to do with our ego and our ambition? Because each one of us have ambition. And if you don't have ambition, go home this afternoon and find it. Look under the bed, top left drawer, somewhere. Go find your ego and go find your ambition, because they're part of what I think it takes to be a level 5 leader. But the question is, what are you going to do with them? Are you going to walk around and have ego and ambition for self? Or are you going to channel that ego and that ambition into the good of the larger whole? And your first larger whole, that's a bad description. Your first group, you'll get it in a second, I promise, is your accountability group. So you have to ask the question, am I a leader first and foremost for myself, for what I can get out of it, for the resume that I'm building, for the experience that I'm garnering, or am I a leader for them? And can you channel the ego and the ambition that you have? Because it's good if you can do the right thing for it, with it. So channel your ego away from yourselves and towards the larger goal. We talked a little bit about ambition. So that is a little bit about what a level 5 leader is. A couple other descriptions that level 5 leaders possess. They possess a ferocious resolve. So you've got to just be like one of those, like, grit your teeth and get it done, people. Like, you just do it. It's just a determination factor that no matter how you feel, no matter what side of the bed you wake up in the morning, no matter what your guys or gals do, no matter what's going on in your life, you have to have that ferocious resolve, that determination to get the things done that you set out to get done. That kind of leads me to a thought of we have to, well, I'll talk about it in a second because it's one of the points. Another kind of description is that they're fanatically driven. So you need to become a driven person. I think it's a pretty important quality and characteristic of a great leader is to be driven. And driven people, we've all seen them, right? Have you guys seen, like, you've seen people that are like, more driven than others. It's easy to recognize. And those driven people, like, it's like they demand results out of themselves. Like, they produce, like, over and over and over again. They're producing results over and over and over. It's like they don't know how to stop. They just have this, like, insatiable desire for results. And no matter what kind of arena they're in, they have a desire for results, and they're driven. This is, I think, is an important thing because, again, it's one of those principles that transcends who each of us are as individuals. Some level fives, because it's easy to say, we always want to say, well, to be a great leader, you have to be such and such kind of person, or you're kind of genetically predisposition to be this. And oftentimes they're charismatic, flamboyant, gifted, handsome, all of those things. But some do not have, level 5 leaders, some do not have an inspiring personality. So that should be like for some of us. Because I'm not an inspiring personality. Like, I'm naturally, that's probably not who I am, is an inspiring personality. But level 5 leaders always have inspiring standards. So you may be sitting in this room this afternoon going, I don't feel like I have the personality for what this takes to be a leader in the furnace. Now, I just want to kind of take your viewpoint and blow it up a little bit. You aren't here just to, like, lead in the furnace. We believe each one of you to be, like, world changers. And that's the kind of scale that we're operating on here. Like, if you want to have Pee-wee scale, cool. Go do it somewhere else. But our scale here is like it's not like cute and fluffy. Like, we believe that God's calling us and using us and giving us a voice to help lead a generation and to affect other local churches and the way they lead their representatives of a generation. So it's a big thing. So I guess my hope and my prayer is that God would just kind of land in your heart kind of the magnitude of what you're about. Because the things of God And it even transcends what we're doing here and with our specific names and programs and local churches. Things of God are big. And the kingdom of God is growing and it's moving. And it should be an absolute thrill and honor to be a part of it. So I hope the magnitude of the kingdom of God kind of gets down in your heart in the early days of the semester as you lead. So some level fives don't have inspiring personality, but they do have inspiring standards. Level five leaders say good is never good enough. So set the standard out there. Failure's not an option. Good is never good enough. I'll ask you kind of the question. Do you, as a leader, are you striving to be a show horse or are you striving to be a plow horse? It's kind of what David was talking about with the yoke. Are you here to be a show horse? Are you doing the things you're doing in life by getting the education you're getting, possessing the jobs that you have, all the things we do in order to be a show horse, or are you a plow horse? So be a plow horse. That's the answer if you didn't know the answer. You want to be a plow horse. And then last... Well, duh. And then the last idea on a level five leader is this idea of a window and a mirror. And you really need to get this. The window and the mirror. Level five leaders, when something good happens, when there's a success in their group, their organization, their whatever that they're leading, level five leaders, when a success happens, they're the ones that are looking out the window to find somebody else to give the credit to. Okay, they're looking out the window for somebody else to find somebody else to give the credit to. And when something bad goes down, when something wrong happens, when there's a loss on the team, the mirror principle comes up. And they're looking at the mirror, looking at themselves, putting the responsibility on themselves for things gone wrong. So you look out the window to give credit. You look in the mirror to give blame. Take responsibility. Does that make sense? Cool. Okay, here we go. That was level five leaders, so that was disciplined people. And I'm going to go quickly. That was probably the longest one. And then disciplined thought, and this is the hedgehog concept. And there's a quote from Plato that's real simple. It says, know thyself. Say it again, know thyself. So, I didn't know I was asking you to repeat me, but that's okay. And I think that's an important thing. You've got to know kind of your inner core. You've got to know who you are. You've got to recognize your experiences for what they are and what they're worth. You've got to know your personality. You've got to know your giftings. You've got to know your natural abilities. You have to know your spiritual gifts. You have to know the calling that's in you. You have to know the purposes that God's put in you. You've got to know you if you're going to be a great leader. Does that make sense? And the idea of the hedgehog is that a hedgehog knows one thing. Like, they're basic. And kind of the analogy is the difference between a fox and a hedgehog. And the fox is this crafty, cunning thing that has lots of knowledge on lots of different things, and they're roaming around, and they're about lots of business. But a hedgehog is kind of just like this simple armadillo meets porcupine creature. And they kind of just like know their one thing, and that's kind of to like burrow holes and eat. And that's their one thing. But what they have the ability to do, and where this analogy is great, is they have the ability to take a complex world and make it really simple. And there are a lot of things that our world offers us to be about. There are a lot of things that we can busy ourselves with. There are a lot of pursuits that are really noble and good. But is it the one thing that you're supposed to be about? Even in the context of your group, there's going to be a personality that kind of springs up out of your group, that your group takes on within the context of the furnace as a whole. You know, we have like big furnace river, and we don't want you to get outside of the river and hang out on the shore or go find another river or anything like that. But big context of the furnace river And there's like, there's deep waters, there's fast waters, there's slow waters kind of in that river. And each group, just based on the people that you find in your group, you're going to find yourself kind of in different places within that river. And you as a leader are going to have to recognize this person is at this place, this person is at this place, and this person is at this place. And the tricky part is you're, it's not like one group's going to get like all first semester guys that have grown up in church their whole life. They don't use swear words. They don't curse, and they haven't had trouble with sin in their life. You're not going to, you know, you can't guarantee, we can't guarantee that we're going to give you three, Jordan, that we're going to give you three squeaky, clean Christian kids that are just like you. Not a guarantee. I can probably guarantee you the opposite, that you're going to get three or four guys that are grossly different from one another, that have come from different backgrounds, have a wide array of experiences, and you're going to have to, as a leader, kind of take it all in, kind of analyze it for what it is, understand each one of these people, their experiences, their backgrounds, their expectations of what they've got themselves into, and you're going to kind of have to turn something that's potentially really chaotic and really just like allow God to use you and work to really paint something beautiful. I know that's cheesy, but best thing I could kind of way to describe it is just allow God to use you. And it goes back to Dave's point of like, you got to be a person of the Holy Spirit to get this thing right. And just to allow all those stories to come in and just get in the flow of God's story. So make a complex world and simplify it. And the importance of that as a leader is, if you're a level 5 leader, you've got this hedgehog thing down and you know kind of your one thing. You're making a complex world simple. And then you have to be fanatically consistent with that. Like once you've kind of, as a leader, you've recognized your one thing. Like what am I to be about on the earth? And what am I to be about in these guys' lives? You've got to be fanatically consistent with that. And don't be the fox that's like, all right, PC, we're going over here, you know. And just on and on and on, all these different things. So be consistent. The hedgehog concept flows out of three circles. And if you, I talked a little bit about this with FSI guys last year, but I won't go over there and draw. But picture you have a circle here. So everybody on your paper, like, draw a circle like so. Kind of left upper somewhere. Yeah. Follow my finger. Like here. And then you got a right circle and draw it over here and have the right and left circle overlap a little bit. You got what I'm saying? And then kind of center bottom in between those two circles here, you've got a third circle right in the center and part of that circle overlaps the first and the second circle. You guys flowing here? Shall I draw? I got some puzzled looks coming from the Baby Shack region of the world. So here you go. You have your three circles. I'd be curious to know what some of you guys drew on your papers. Some of you guys have Frosty the Snowman. Some of you guys have a figure eight with an extra circle on the bottom. So, okay, everybody got this?
Yeah.
So you've got your first circle here. And the first circle is about... Lost my little doobop. The first circle, I want you to write what I am passionate about. It doesn't really matter which circle. And then the second circle, I want you to write, define the win. And then the third circle, did you guys get that? Define the win. And then the third circle is, what can I be the best in the world at? Talk about setting the standard out here, right? What can I be the best in the world at? So you've got, what am I passionate about? You have to define the win. So it's like you have to figure out like what is success for me? And kind of my working definition of success is achieving the things that you set out to achieve. Does that make sense? So it kind of takes it out of this realm of theory of being a spiritual leader is this, or spirit being a leader is that, or being a success in ministry is this. It's kind of some scary territory to like seek out to be a ministry success. Like that's kind of funky territory. Right? It's kind of that whole thing. It's like you got leadership out here and you got everybody going, I'm going to be that, but everybody's forsaking kind of the build-up process. And if you've kind of gotten your mind like, I'm going to be a ministry success, chances are you're going to forsake kind of the build-up process. And only God controls that breakthrough time. And I would guarantee, I would put my life on it that everybody that you would categorize as a ministry success didn't mean to get there. They did some things really intentional to control the things that they can control in the build-up process, but they never sought out to be this thing out here. I mean, do you think for once Pastor Shedd ever thought he would be leading 30 million evangelicals in America? No freaking way. But he knows what to do with it when it's given to him because he hasn't forsaken the build-up process. Right? So we can't control what we become, but we can control the now, right? Okay, cool. So what am I passionate about? Define the win. You've got to know, what are you seeking to achieve in your own life, in the life of your group, on and on and on. And then, what can I be the best in the world at? And then, the little area that all three of those circles meet, right here, like that's your hedgehog. Like that's your one thing. That's the thing that you ought to be about in life. Does that make sense? It's really easy to get caught up on the essentials of life and miss the one thing life is about. Does that make sense? So you got to know what you're about as an individual, what you're about as a person. Cool. Okay, so that's the hedgehog concept, and I need to go a little bit more quickly. Okay, and the last thing, one more thing on the hedgehog thing is you can't grow every way that you can. Does that make sense? Like here I stand as an individual, and there's this thing, this thing, this thing, and you could turn around a complete circle, and everywhere you look, there's something that you could be growing at and becoming better at and giving your time to and your energy and your life to, but you just can't. And you've got to kind of stop and go, I just can't. Everybody just say, I just can't. Does that make sense? Like, you can't grow in every area that it is possible to grow in, or you won't grow in any. I'd rather be like really strong, really in depth, really well versed in a couple of things, and be what I guess the best way to say it is be an expert in a couple of things, and not be like a novice in lots. That's good. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because if you're kind of this deep in 100 different areas, guess what? You're still only this deep. That's good. It's just spread out really far. But if you can find kind of one or two things that what am I going to be about within the big river of God and His story, and you'll be this deep in it, right? Does that make sense? So that's the hedgehog concept. And then the last thing is a culture of discipline. A guy named Viktor Frankl, I have no idea who Mr. Frankl is, but he's got a good quote. Yeah. Says that freedom is only part of the story and half the truth. That is why I've recommended a Statue of Liberty on the East Coast and a Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast. Did you guys get that? Freedom is only part of the story and half the truth. This guy recommended in his quote that we have our Statue of Liberty on the East Coast, and he's recommending we need a Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast. Because it is from a place of discipline that freedom comes. It's from a place of discipline that creativity comes. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's in a place of discipline that you get some spare time. There's lots of people that are busy doing lots of things, but we're not disciplined. You know what I'm saying? It's like we're going lots of different directions, and for most of us, they're all lots of good directions, but we're not disciplined about it. So I would challenge you guys first and foremost, be people of discipline as you lead. You're going to have to be, otherwise you're going to be crazy.
That's good.
And you're not going to give it what it deserves, and you'll be, the semester will fly by, and you'll go, man, I met with my guys for 2 hours once a week because that was the requirement, but outside of that, didn't really spend much time with them. I wasn't at coffee with very many of them. You know what I'm saying? Just the natural things. And they deserve better than that. Your group deserves better than that. So freedom is only part of the story and half the truth. Let's be people of discipline. I'm going to buzz through some just quick descriptions of that. The purpose of bureaucracy is to compensate for incompetence and lack of discipline. So if you run your group the way it should be run, David shouldn't have to intervene much in it. But the moment that you're not disciplined and you're not competent and your group's suffering, that's when it's going to demand David's attention. Does that make sense? So the furnace is set up to where if you'll do it and you'll own it and you'll lead well, it's going to be yours to lead. And David's not going to have a thumb in your back, you know, checking in on every method and every word that you utter to your guys, because that's not his style. So if you'll keep it great, it'll be a great group. A couple other things. Never just focus on what you have accomplished. And this is kind of another issue of kind of the standards. We could all sit around and talk for great lengths at all the things that we've accomplished as people, as leaders, as believers, on and on and on and on. But what we have to do is ask the question, what have I accomplished relative to the things I set out to accomplish? Does that make sense? Because if we set out to accomplish X, you know, we could kind of forsake X and 3 months down the road I'll be sitting around holding hands, singing Kumbaya, talking about how great we did, all the things that were successes in our groups, and all the ways that we led people, and all of the success stories that came out of our time with these young men and women. But if we haven't accomplished what we set out to accomplish, then do we really succeed to the measure that we, A, felt God calling us to succeed in? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So never just focus on what you've accomplished. Always keep it relative to what you set out to accomplish. This is kind of just a practical thing. You guys have to-do lists? Are you guys to-do list people? All right, here's the challenge. Create a stop doing list. Did you get that? Create a stop doing list. Like if we're going to be disciplined people, if we're going to have disciplined thought, and we're going to have disciplined action, there are going to be things we have to start doing, but more times than not, there's going to be things we have to stop doing. So create a stop doing list so you can be a focused person. The problem is not opportunity creation, but opportunity selection. So pick the right things to be about. And when you've gone there and you go, I'm passionate about this. I've defined the win as this. I can be the best in the world at this. And the place that's in the core of all those three things is your thing. That's what you're to be about. And you filter all of your decisions through that. And if an opportunity doesn't fit in that, you say, no thanks. Go find somebody else. You don't have to worry about creating opportunities. They're going to come your way in life. It's a busy world. The question is, are you going to select the right opportunities? And then lastly, it takes remarkable courage to channel your resources, which is everything you are, into one or a few arenas. So this is like, it's a call to bravery. It's a call to courage to forsake lots of things that are good and right and noble, and go for the things that matter most. Cool? Let's say a word of prayer, and then we'll take three questions, and then we'll go into some more discussion groups. So, Jesus, I thank you for each one of these young men and women, God, and I ask that by your Holy Spirit, you would even now begin to just allow them to know thyself. God, I ask you to allow our eyes to turn inward just for a very short season to where we would know our own heart, that we would identify our own passions. And God, I ask that you would just speak very loudly and clearly to the purposes that you have each one of these young men and women here on planet Earth for. And God, we just tell you that that's what we want to be about. We want to be about you. We want to be about advancing your kingdom. And I ask you just help us to find our place in that. And God, you would give us the wisdom and insight to help facilitate that for others. God, I ask that you just make us great facilitators this semester and this year. That we would lead with questions. And that we would lead with humility, modesty. But God, that we would have a great will and that we would be fearless as well. So Lord, we love you and we thank you. Amen. Okay, three questions. I know I talked way too long. Stephen.
All right, if the factor of good is never good enough, in navigating the tight line of staying innocent, being humble, and kind of going through the chain of command, how do you navigate in a place where you want to take things from good to great, not to be reputable as a negative person?
Yeah.
And what that means.
I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is ownership is important for everybody at all levels of the group. And I think that the furnace, as the example at hand, allows for there to be a really high level of ownership. But there's also really clear-cut lines on how that ownership is to be expressed. So I think one of the ways that you can lead is to grant the same kind of ownership to those you lead. Because when there's buy-in, there's momentum. And when there's momentum, you're in an ascent. Does that help at all? So I don't know if that answers the question at all. But I mean, I know what you're saying, because, and David mentioned too, there's the tendency, and I did it, I mean, like, to be 18, 19, to be radical for God, radical for his church, and just to be a stone thrower. You know what I mean? And it's like, we all kind of need to recognize, like, you've all heard the saying, you live in a glass house, it's not wise to throw stones. Does that make sense? Like, it's easy to get into, like, stone thrower mode and be like, it's not radical enough. You know, David's not in enough prayer meetings. It's one I heard this week. How come we don't see signs and wonders? You know, how come the leadership team sucks? How come the staff sucks? How come they don't take me to lunch enough? You know what I mean? How come I'm not growing fast enough? How come people aren't paying enough attention to me? Like, it's easy to get into, like, wanting something to be good and wanting something to be great. And it's kind of almost, like, counter-instinctual to go into, like, serve mode at that moment. Because it's like, kind of instinctual to go, like, I'm going to lead the way. I'm the one. You know what I mean? Like, I think we kind of, in all, like, the grandeur that I talked about, you know, it's like, we kind of have to settle the question, like, there's lots of areas that you are the one, but there's more areas than not that you're not the one. You know what I mean? Like, you're not, just not the one. But there's going to be an area that in light of that, you have to rise up and say, but I am the one for this. And this is the destiny that God's put on me. And more times than not, if somebody else is leading something, you can kind of rule out from the beginning, you're not the one, you know? Like, we're not going to have hostile takeovers, you know? Even if you thought there was something you could do better than David, like, you're not going to convince Ted to fire David and give it to you. You know what I mean? Like, a bad, bad way to think. Like, it's not going to happen. Does that help at all? David, you had your hand up.
I just wanted to say, Steph, I think Stephen has exemplified one of the answers, and that is you have a passion and you throw the stone, you can become the answer to that stone. This is answer to that. Stephen Davis, a year ago, said, I think we need better leadership training for accountability. Okay? Well, he didn't say, you suck, David. You just throw them out there. Instead, he said, so, I'm going to help make it happen.
Yeah.
And here we are today. So I think that Stephen's life answers the question. You know, a lot of times, when you see a level of excellence that's lacking, go to the foundation and say, okay, how do we develop it? How do we make it happen? And that's going to take hours of work and labor. And if you don't have enough in you to make it great, then probably aren't educated enough to have an opinion.
Question two, Commisso.
Seems that knowing yourself is pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you move from assuming you know yourself into really knowing yourself to accomplish great things?
Well, I think I think we fool ourselves a lot. We almost kind of have this self-trickery thing going on because we're a little bit afraid to say I know myself, because when you say you know yourself, then you got to do something with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's kind of like a reoccurring theme. It's the whole if we'll admit to ourselves that prayer matters, then guess what? You got to pray. Otherwise, you're just denying the thing you've come to know is true. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of the persuasion that we know ourselves a little bit better than we let ourselves on to believe. But it's hard because it's almost like a false reality thing going on. And I think it's a spiritual thing of saying, God, help me know my true reality, and help me live in it, and help me be content in it, and then help me move forward in it. I think those three things are a guide. It's a man-made filter to help us do something that is really innate and really raw. It's what am I passionate about? Define the win. What is the win for your life? You know, what is success for your life? And we were at Passion this week, and Louis Giglio was talking to there was over 900 volunteers. And, it was in his general session, sorry. And he was talking about how you have to define the purpose. And for them, and their core, and their thing, the purpose is the glory of God. And then he says, each one of us has a passion. And the passion always serves the purpose. And a lot of times we have kind of switched it around and we've said the purpose serves our passion.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So whatever it is that's in your heart to do and whatever it's into your core to be, defining the win is this within the realm of the glory or the kingdom of God, whether it's the glory of God or whether it's whatever it is you want to call it. Whatever it is for you. And then what you're passionate about has to serve that thing. And then the last thing is, what can I be the best in the world at? And that's not, what's fun about that is that's not an issue of arrogance. It's just an issue of kind of reality. Because there's lots of things you're going to go, no way, not it, not it, not it. But there's going to be a couple things you go, maybe. And then you'll kind of explore that a little bit. And then eventually, maybe you'll chunk one more out and you'll be left with one. So it's what we do is it's easy to look at people that have made it and success stories. And from the outside, we look at them and we go, man, they were an overnight success. We can look at an example in the book is, we can look at a Walmart, and all we've ever known from our 20 plus years of existence is that Walmart has always been super centers in every small town in America. Walmart has always been this thing we've known as Walmart, right? But that's from an outsider looking in. And we don't know what the backstory was. We don't know all the hard work. We don't know all this self searching, the process, all those things. And if you want to, here's my thing is, if you want to become an overnight success, then you'll probably have to be like every other overnight success that took about 20 years in the making. So at 20 something, I don't think we could say, this is the thing I'm to be about. For some of us, it is. But if you'll start the process, 20 years down the road, when you're 40-something, you'll probably be operating in the thing. You'll be operating kind of in that hedgehog. Cool, one more question. Going, Davey.
Okay, so let's talk about the third question. What can you be the best in the world at? Because for most of us, except for maybe you and Brandon, I don't know that we could look at anything and go, I could be the best in the world at that. How do we get started? In the sense that most people here at 21, 25 go, I can't even think of something that I'd be the best in the world. And, like, when you said that, I mean, and Jim, I know Colin's been great, but I think, I mean, I went basketball, no. Football, no. Baseball, no. You know, like, how do we answer that question?
Ooh. Yeah. No.
Let me yeah. say a little, some of my thoughts and you can make it better.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, answer your own, become the answer to your own prayer.
It seems like, I thought what you said was fabulous when you said, maybe. When you said, I couldn't do that, definitely. I couldn't do that. But that, maybe. And it seems like that maybe is really all we have.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, there's some really talented people in this room, but I don't know anybody here that could immediately go, now, Dan Perkins is the best in the world at that, or he really has, or D-Dub could be the best in the world at that, at this point.
Yeah.
It's like you, that little window of maybe is really all we have at this point. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of have to lean into the maybe. You know what I'm saying?
No.
Like, I think it's to just say, I mean, everybody here is a leader. I mean, everybody here is amening and chomping at the bit and way to go and great and good point. And everybody here wants to be at one. And so I don't know. Maybe you can just comment on that.
I think the first thing is, like, you have to say, I think you have to say, I'm going to start the process of the, that's not it, that could be it, that might be it, and then evaluate the maybes. And I think kind of some of the overall point is, you know, maybe you won't be, the reality is maybe you won't be the best in the world at that one thing, but I think that competency can be a curse, because there's lots of things that we're competent enough to do and to be, and if we stop there and go, competent. That's, I think, the hang-up. So I think that the what can you be the best in the world at is like, let's jerk it out as extreme as we can in order to try to filter out all of those things that say, I'm competent at that, I'm competent at this, I'm competent at this. Then you end up sitting at a desk job answering phone calls going, welcome to Discover, you know, because you're competent at that. But I don't want to be. I'm not. Maybe it is your thing to sit at Discover and say, "Welcome to Discover." I'm not slamming it, but it's like I'm competent at that. But for me to do that would be an absolute curse.
Yeah.
Does that help?
And I think you are the best in the world at leadership talks.